I kind of lose any feeling of direction. Where I'm going, what, you know, what I'm doing. Should I be doing something more important? Or, and at times like that, I read something by Dogen. Because in some strange way, this 13th century monk who I've never met, and who wrote in such a difficult, subtle way that it's very difficult to understand, somehow it's encouraging. And the other day I was feeling like that, and I found a version of he wrote a chapter about practicing zazen called Fukan Zazengi. And it's just in English, it's just two sheets, and he just describes how to sit and why to sit, and it's really lovely. Not only that, but this translation was done 20 years ago by my teacher Nishijima Roshi and Mike Cross, who was the other co-translator with him on the Shogun Genzo. And I've got a commentary that Mike wrote. She's really nice, so pass these around, really. And we can go through, and I can read bits from the commentary that they Mike did on it. He wrote a couple of versions of Fukan Zazengi, but this is the one that's most used. And it's in book one of the Shobo Genzo, right at the end. It's not one of the numbered chapters, it's an appendix. And the commentary that my teacher made about it is the Fu in Fukan Zazengi expresses universality. Master Dogen wrote this exhortation to practice sitting Zen, not only for Japanese monks of his own time, in the 54 years from 1200 to 1254 that he lived, but for all human beings of all times. This is why people who love sitting Zen regard Fukan Zazengi as Master Dogen's most important written legacy. So, you know, you've got these four books of the Shobo Genzo. You've got a great big thick book called Eihei Koroku with his poems and informal writings. But some people think that this short exhortation is his most important thing that he wrote, because it's about zazen. So it starts, "Now when we research it, the truth originally is all around. Why rely upon practice and experience?" The phrase practice and experience comes up all the way through Dogen's writings. It sounds like two different words in English, practice and experience, but in Japanese it's just two kanji. So it's like almost one thing. "Now when we research it, the truth originally is all around. why rely upon practice and experience? So if the truth is everywhere, and Dogen quotes in the Lotus Sutra, it says the truth is written on rocks and on grass and trees, and there are many writings which say the truth, whatever that is everywhere. So if it's everywhere, why do we need to practice it? Why do we need to search for it? And that brings out the question, what does the truth mean? And in English, the truth is an abstract concept. We think that the truth must be something that you either know or don't know, or understand or don't understand. But in Dogen's writings, and in Buddhism in general, the truth is something more real. And Nishijima wrote, "The beating of my heart is the truth. The singing of the birds is the truth. The force of gravity acting on me is the truth. My response to it is the truth. In and all around us, these truths are always being realized. We don't need to try to get them." So we have to really redefine what the word, certainly in English, means. From an abstract meaning to something real. There must be a better word than truth in English. So choose your own. The vehicle for the fundamental exists naturally. Where is there the need to expend effort? Obviously, this reality is all around us, and so why do we need to make an effort? Our body, for example, works naturally to keep our nervous system and all our little cells and everything working correctly, taking any energy from outside and processing it and getting rid of what's unnecessary. So the world works naturally. The trees grow naturally. The leaves drop off naturally. We are born and then we die. So the vehicle for the fundamental is Dogen's way of saying the way that everything works, the basis of everything. The basic mechanism behind everything is here. It's working. So why should we need to make an extra effort? We don't need to make an effort to breathe. We just breathe naturally. Furthermore, the whole body far transcends dust and dirt. Who could believe in the means of sweeping and polishing? There's a story about the sixth patriarch, Master Daikan Enno. It's in the Shobogenzo somewhere. Master Daikan Enno, who was the sixth guy after Bodhidharma in China. He wasn't an educated man, and he came to live in the temple to work in the I think like rice store place. I can't imagine exactly what he did, but one of the things he did was kind of measure out the rice for the kitchen and that kind of thing. So a very practical job. Some would say a lowly job. And although he was a very simple guy in that way, he knew what the teachings were about. And the master of the temple, Master Nangaku, knew this fact. He knew that the only person in the temple who knew what he was getting at was this guy in the rice store. But his head priest was quite an arrogant guy who one day wrote a poem, a very beautiful poem, and pinned it up in the wall, on the wall in the temple. And I can't remember exactly, you'll have to look it up, but the poem more or less said, you know, we have to make ourselves better and better and purify ourselves, like sweeping away the dirt and polishing the dust off the mirror. It's a kind of poem that was suggesting that we have to work hard and make ourselves better and better, which I guess he was doing. And Daikan Enno read this and must have thought, "Oh, that a bollocks." And so he wrote his own poem and stuck it up, which said something like, "The eternal mirror, which is a symbol for the truth, has no dust. We don't need to polish it. It's clear already." Mm. And when Nangaku read this poem from the guy in the rice store, he realised that Daikan Enno had understood everything. So secretly, in the middle of the night, he passed on the transmission of the Dharma to him and gave him his robe and said, "Now, go quickly before anybody sees, because, you know, all these arrogant monks I have to look after they won't help you." So Daikan Enno went off and set up his own lineage. Well, no, he continued the same lineage. So that's the meaning of why is there any need? Means of sweeping and polishing. We don't need to make an effort to get somewhere or to get rid of something. I think most people are brought up to think that we need to get rid of our bad points and improve our good points, make ourselves better human beings. Not to deny that, the teachings that Dogen transmitted points out that everything is okay as it is. So we don't need consciously and intentionally to try and get rid of our bad points and become better and better. It doesn't mean we don't become better and better and we don't get rid of our bad points, but it's something to do with the intentional effort is not necessary. In general, we never depart from the place where we should be. Of what use, then, are the tiptoes of training? In general, we never depart from the place where we should be. Well, the only place we can be is where we are. We do depart from it mentally and spend weekends like this, stopping doing that, so that we can be where we are. You could say that the point of practicing zazen, or practicing any other practice of balance, is just to bring us back to where we already are. The tiptoes of training suggest a very very pious monk, you know, at the altar, putting the incense up like this, or, you know, on the tiptoes like this. Now, the tiptoes of training suggests like making some kind of special spiritual effort. So that's his first paragraph. The truth is everywhere. We don't need to practice. Everything works as it is. We don't need to make a special effort to make it work. We're far beyond being dirty or contaminated, so we don't need to try and make ourselves pure. We can never get away from where we are. So what's the object of kind of spiritual efforts to get to a better place? That's his first paragraph. The second paragraph begins with however. However, if there is a thousandth or a hundredth of a gap, heaven and earth are far apart. A gap between what? Well, we could say that, for instance, if I sit with my head in the clouds thinking wonderful thoughts, but my posture is like this, and my body physically is not in a very good state, then there's a big separation between my mental and physical states. And if a trace of disagreement arises, we lose the mind in confusion. So if what we're thinking and reality around us is different, if there's a disagreement between what we're thinking or what we hope or what we believe and what actually is around us, then there is confusion. We lose the mind in confusion. The commentary of Mike wrote says, when belief in our own intellect causes us to lie to ourselves, to remain blind to our own unconscious motives, confusion is liable to result. A person who truly loves sitting in zazen will naturally tend towards a simple life, a life of integrity, in which the word fits the action and the action fits the word. Which is a rather nice way to put it. He Even if, proud of our understanding and richly endowed with realizations, we obtain special insights, special states of insight, attain the truth, clarify the mind, manifest a zeal that pierces the sky, and ramble through those remote spheres that are entered with the head, we have almost completely lost the vigorous path of getting the body out. So the first part of that suggests somebody, maybe me, who thinks they know, who thinks they're right. They have something absolutely clear, they understand everything, they've got insight into everything, their mind is clear, they're enthusiastic, a zealot, with a zeal that pierces the sky. This is suggesting a very intellectual area. He says, if we're like that, we've almost completely lost the vigorous path of getting the body out. Vigorous path of getting the body out. With that, he's suggesting that that state of intellectual certainty, clarity, and everything, which is quite a common state, something is missing. If we act in that state, we completely get the body out of the area in which we were. It means to get the body out means stepping out of the prison of our feelings and thoughts and experiencing action, being, reality. A boy is standing on the edge of a diving board by a swimming pool, feeling afraid and considering what to do. Then he jumps in. In jumping in, he transcends what he has been feeling and what he's been thinking. When he jumps into the pool, he gets the body out. So what Dogen is talking about is acting. So he's saying, if we get lost in the intellectual sphere where our thoughts are clear, our belief is strong, we're certain, we should act. We should get our body out of that area and into the real world. And the real world is in a different area to all our thoughts, feelings, beliefs and so on. Another example, somebody who practices Zazen in a very rigid military style posture. There are some groups who practice Zazen and you have to sit very, very rigidly and you mustn't move. And I've actually been to a retreat where the person leading the retreat shouted out to people, "Don't move! Don't move!" If you're subscribing to that kind of practice, something which is rigid and based on a belief, then you haven't got the body out, according to Dogen. So one reason I always say it's okay to move, it's okay to adjust your body, is because when you adjust your body, you're making a small action. And when you make that small action, you leave your mind just for a little bit. So if you're sitting in Zazen and you're lost in your thoughts, and then you suddenly realise you're lost in your thoughts, if you correct your posture just a little, it breaks your mental train and returns you to sitting. Oh, I'm here. Whether it's just straightening up your back or moving your neck or shoulders. Moreover, remembering the natural sage of Jetavana Park, we can still see the traces of his 6 years of upright sitting. We can still hear rumours of the transmitter of the mind seal at Shaolin spending 9 years facing the wall. The ancient saints were like that already. How could people today fail to practice wholeheartedly? Well, the natural sage of Jetavana Park means Gautama Buddha, which is in the Pali Sutras. It's where he is recorded as giving lots of his talks. And he left his family life at just under 30 years old. And started teaching people when he was about 5 years later, I think. And the transmitter of the mind seal at Shaolin means Master Bodhidharma, who is recorded as having sat facing the wall for 9 years. And in Japanese legend, he lost his legs from doing that. So the Japanese have a little model of Bodhidharma, which is round, like a wobbly man. It doesn't have any legs. It has a face painted on it. It looks like a very, very severe Indian practitioner. Often, you know, and no legs. Because Bodhidharma sat facing the wall for 9 years, so lost to the use of his legs. Of course he didn't. It's a legend. But he practiced for 9 years before anybody recognised what it was he was doing. Because in China at that time, the Buddhism that had come already was very esoteric, not practical, not pragmatic. So when Bodhidharma came and started practicing Zazen, people really didn't know what he was doing. So he just sat there practicing Zazen.
In a cave? In a cave?
Yeah, maybe, I don't know.
You weren't there.
Was it in the cave?
Yeah. The legendary, yeah.
Yeah,
okay. I didn't say
anything. I don't think he let us sat in a cave, do you?
You'd have to stop sitting if it rained otherwise.
So cease the intellectual work of studying sayings and chasing words. Wow. I like that. Because, for instance, there's so much Buddhism around now. Buddhism, I like to write with a small B and in inverted commas, because I don't know. There's so much of it around, I'm not quite sure what it is. It's all written or spoken. And to me, Dogen says, oh, it's okay to ignore all that, which I like. The main thing is to walk the walk. To be able to talk a good talk is also a virtue, but it's not the main thing. In sitting Zen, we cease secondary concerns and come back to the main thing. Then the main thing is sitting. Learn the backward step of turning light around and reflecting it. Can you catch the metaphor there? Stepping backwards means stopping doing things. We're always doing things in our lives. We think our lives are about doing things. I often do, and to read that Dogen is saying it's not about doing it, it's about being, is very helpful. Learn the backward step of turning light around and reflecting it. You could say looking at ourselves. In the first chapter of the Shobo Genzo, Dogen writes, in the second chapter, sorry, Genjo Koan, to know the self. Can anybody remember the quote?
To study the self
is to forget the self.
Yeah.
To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be
at one with, realized by all things.
By all things. Body and mind naturally drop off, and the original face appears. Of course, there's nothing that drops off. What Dogen means by body and mind drop off is that the division we make between the mental and the physical is no longer there. And that state without any division between mental and physical, we know, every human being knows it, every living thing knows it, because it's the original state. Every time we do something, every time we act fully, whether it's picking up a cup of coffee or shoveling mulch into a wheelbarrow, when we're fully doing that action, there is no division between our mental and physical parts. So we are whole. And Dogen describes that as body and mind dropping off with his famous phrase, which he said to have realized when he was practicing in China with his master. Shinjin Datsuraku in Japanese, body and mind dropped off. And it said that that phrase was what when Dogen realized what Zazen was about. So body and mind naturally drop off. That suggests not making an effort, but a natural state. And the original face appears. What's the original face? Maybe it's the face of a baby who hasn't been conditioned, or the face of a chicken walking across the yard. or the face of a daffodil. So natural state means something which hasn't divided itself into mental and physical and then started thinking about what it is. If we want to attain the matter of the ineffable, we should urgently practice the matter of the ineffable. Dogen uses the word ineffable, inmo in Japanese, which can be translated as what, the kanji, well, like what, what's that on the table? In the Shobogenzo, we translate it as the ineffable because it suggests something that we haven't defined. We're always defining everything: daffodil, microphone, table, chairs. But what's actually in front of me doesn't have a name. The table doesn't know it's called a table. The wood doesn't know it's part of the table. So in that sense, we can say everything is ineffable. In the area before we start naming and discriminating, the table is just itself. It's ineffable. And Dogen also says in the Shobogenzo, when we are in that state, i.e. in Zazen, we are also ineffable. So when we're sitting in Zazen, we're ineffable. That doesn't mean if I think about what I'm, who I am when I'm sitting in Zazen, I don't know. It means we're beyond intellectual recognition. We're something in its natural state, in its original state, sitting ineffably. So that's the first part, and then he goes on in the second part to describe actually how to sit. What time do we stop?
20 past.
So let's stop there for this morning, and if anybody's got anything to say, say it.
A zealot is someone who is sure about things.
Not sure.
A zealot is somebody who is sure about things.
Yeah.
Sure about everything.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting. This morning we did at the beginning of Samu. I think that's called Matt as well, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Matt here. Matt introduced this Hong Kong Chinese girl who's working in the yard to us.
Yeah.
With the words, I'm sorry to talk about her when she's not here, but with the words, she just one day sold her motorbike, got a one-way ticket, and arrived at Lower Shore Farm. And he said, whenever you ask her what she's going to do next, she says, I'm not sure.
Oh.
So, I did actually ask this Matt.
Yeah.
I did actually ask her if she wanted to join us for sitting or talking if the group allowed that. But I don't know how good her English is. But that just struck me that that phrase, because sureness, I thought, if you're sure about something, it closes everything. You have no, everything is categorized, put in a place, there's no openness left. So I think it's quite important to be not sure about things.
In one sense, in the intellectual sense, yeah. But we can be sure physically, that's what confidence is. So for instance, in martial arts, you're learning to be sure about the way your body acts. So there is a confidence. You can be sure, but what we tend to think of is our ideas are right.
Yeah.
So this is what Dogen's getting at. We're taught like that. In the last few days, since there's been the situation in Ukraine, everybody's got their own opinion, and we're expected to have our opinion. It's quite interesting that I find that people in the UK have outwardly much stronger voiced opinions about everything than where I'm living now. That may just be because people in Eastern Europe have learnt to hide their opinions. Nevertheless, I'd been staying with my brother for 3 days, and can't talk about anything without getting into a kind of an exchange of opinions. So I just keep quiet there these days. In his work, The Mula Madhyamaka Karika, Nagarjuna, in his very last verse in the work, advises us to drop off our opinions. Drop off the things that we hold on to rigidly and believe. Doesn't mean you can't live without having an idea about something. But the suggestion is that it doesn't help to be intellectually rigid. What's the girl's name?
Molly.
Oh.
Yeah, didn't he say she arrived literally 2 days ago or something?
He said she just arrived for one day tickets. Here she is. But no, the theme of sureness, like... I say I want to do something, somebody says to me, are you sure? So I'm not sure, because how can I be sure? I just do it.
Well, there's a difference between if you want to do something, that's an idea. Doing it is different to wanting to do it.
If I want to go walking in the mountains of Scotland in the middle of winter, and my wife says to me, are you sure you really want to do that? It's going to be cold. And I say, oh, no, I'm not sure. I'll just do it and see what happens.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Sorry to bring out my wife.
No. we all know your wife. By proxy.
But her voice this morning at breakfast saying, you can't put that knife into the jam. It's got...
So she has strong views, does she?
I'm not sure.
It's what Dogen says. I mean, you know, he wrote all his life these challenging essays, some of which seem to be very clear and definite. And now he's writing about not having, not being a zealot. He was sure about something, but what he was sure about wasn't what he was writing. It was how he was living his life. I think in today's world, we almost live in ideas. I mean, we live in the ideas, and only occasionally do we notice that there's a world which is different from the world of our ideas. And because of that, activities, different kinds of sport and so on, are a kind of salvation for us. So if you work in a very stressful job, I don't know, in a bank or somewhere, where you're using your brain all the time, and at the end of the day, what saves you is you go to the gym, or you go for a run or something like that. You get the body out. Because if we don't get the body out, we live in this world of ideas, concepts. And that world of ideas and concepts is not where we actually live. It's not where our physical body lives. So we can be really clever, quick, brilliant, and not notice that our body is becoming ill, for example, or we didn't have anything to eat today.
He puts it very strongly in the next paragraph. He says, do not think of good and bad, do not care about right and wrong.
God.
So that's quite an abandonment of views.
Can we do that? Don't think of right and wrong. Do not think of good and bad. Does that mean that anything I do is okay?
I don't see that as meaning things can't be good or bad, but it's not about your idea of good and bad. Your actions will have an effect in reality, won't they? On yourself, on other people, on the world. But is he perhaps talking about being grounded in reality rather than getting carried away in your thoughts? Because the danger is that our thoughts end up shaping the world. Not always, and you know, everyone thinks they're the good guy, everyone's got a brilliant idea for making the world a better place, but it doesn't always work that way.
Yeah, he's talking about sitting in zazen. So people who start to practice zazen often feel, am I doing it right? Is my posture okay? So he's saying, don't think of anything like that. Just do it. Yeah, maybe we can just read that next paragraph. In general, a quiet room is good. It doesn't mean a silent room, just quiet. It's okay to have some noises, but we all know that some noises disturb us. For me, I don't mind most noises except somebody talking. So that I can hear in my own language. I don't mind if they're talking Czech. So just a quiet room. And you know, don't eat and drink a lot before you sit. Just in moderation. Abandon all involvements. That's sometimes difficult if you've got kids or something like that and you want to sit. Mm. Oh, no, just take them in the other room. I'm sitting there. We agreed. So leave all the involvements. I've got to be... I can sit for 10 minutes and I've got to catch the bus. Makes it quite difficult. So if you can, abandon all involvements for a period. Give the myriad things a rest. Yeah. Do not think of good and bad. Do not care about right and wrong. Stop the driving movement of mind, will, consciousness. That's very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably the most difficult sentence in the whole thing. Because we don't realise that we have a driving movement of mind. But sometimes it drives us, it won't stop. And even we sit in Zazen, it carries on. But then if we come on a retreat for 2-3 days, that driving movement often slows down.
Mm.
Cease intellectual consideration through images, thoughts and reflections. So don't sit there imagining what you're going to do tomorrow or what you did yesterday or thinking about something. It's difficult to stop all those things. We sit down and our mind is active. But Dogen's saying don't continue them. Do not aim to become a Buddha. Even in Dogen's time there was a strong teaching that you practice Zazen to become enlightened or awakened, which is what Buddha means in Sanskrit. Though Dogen's saying it's not about becoming. It's about returning to our original state.
Mm.
And maybe the most... the thing that works most against that when we're practicing Zazen is the idea that we're going to become somebody that we're not at the moment. Somebody called a Buddha or somebody who's better or wiser or calmer. Often we might sit and hope we're going to become calmer. Well, I hope so too, really. How could it be connected with sitting or lying down? In Dogen's time, there were lots of writings about there are different ways you can do Buddhist practice, sitting or lying down or walking and so on. But for Dogen, Zazen was different to those. I think now sometimes if you go on a yoga course or something, at the end you might lie down and close your eyes and let everything drift away, and
mm-hmm.
it's very nice, kind of deep relaxation. But Zazen is not that. It's not deep relaxation.
So the sitting here is a different kind of sitting from Zazen. The sitting here is a different kind of sitting from Zazen, do you mean? How could it be connected with sitting or lying down?
Oh, sitting, yes, yes. Sitting in a chair.
Sitting back.
Yeah. Zazen, the za of Zazen means sitting. So there were lots of writings about different ways of practicing in Dogen's time. So for Dogen, there's only one authentic posture which he describes from now on. And sitting like we're sitting now, or lying down and connecting with the universe or whatever, are different.